Well, I'd like to thank Bob and Chris for inviting me to come and speak with you this morning. The title of my talk is Do No-Till Practice, How Do No-Till Practices Influence Soil Biological Processes? So I come from Australia, in the western part of Australia, and no-till is everything. If we didn't have no-till in Western Australia, most of the soil would have blown away. So we've really benefited a lot from introducing no-till, but some of what I'm going to say shows that it's not just a straightforward process and there are a lot of complexities. So just to acknowledge important people who have helped, but Western Australia has a no-till association which has been primarily responsible for introducing a major change in farming practice in Western Australia and in other parts of Australia. And so I'd like to acknowledge them and my co-author, Ken Flower, who works with them particularly. So what is no-till? And I think no-till is such a tiny little word, but it's different in many situations. So depending where you practice no-till, you'll have very different effects. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I'm going to look at the impact of no-till on biological processes and just giving a few examples. This is a huge, wide topic, and I'll just highlight a few issues there. Then I'll come back to Western Australia and show a little bit about what people are doing in the West. And then I'll speak about a program of benchmarking soil quality for farmers that's happening in Australia and how we're engaging with farmers to help them think about how they're managing, because ultimately the practices are delivered by the farmers, so we work with them. So basically, no-till is about minimising disturbance of the soil, keeping ground cover. In Western Australia, before no-till, there was a lot of soil blowing, and maintaining a diversity in the rotations and reducing compaction. So that's the theory. It doesn't always come out that way in practice, but that's the aim. But as I've mentioned, that the implementation of reduced tillage practices has a very different outcome depending on where you live, what soil you have, and what climatic conditions you have, and how much rain you get, and how cold or hot it is. And a lot of this is related to soil disturbance. Now, disturbance sort of has a negative connotation, but as I finish up, I hope you realise that disturbance is a really important part of the process of agriculture. And in no-till, we're managing organic matter primarily. We're keeping it as much as possible. And there are many different ways of dealing with organic matter. Sometimes you've got too much, but in Western Australia, organic matter is sometimes grazed by animals. And this is what we're managing. So the farmer is managing great diversity of organisms in soil, as you know, but each patch is different. And one of the things we've tried to do is get the farmers to understand what they've got in their soil, what it's doing and what it looks like, and we give them some tools to do that themselves. So how does no-till impact soil biological fertility? So primarily, obviously, it's an organic matter management. There's an increase in load of organic matter on the soil surface. It's not being distributed. In the old days, it was disturbed and mixed through the soil more. So there are issues about leaving it on the surface. We're changing the way it's distributed. But the organisms in soil are really influenced by the habitat. So the physical changes in the soil are the drivers of what's happening to that microbial community. So I'm going to talk quite a bit about that, because if we want to manage the organism, we have to create the home that it's going to like to live in. And that's what the farmer is doing, changing the environment of the organism. So obviously we want to reduce compaction. We don't want to break up the mycorrhizal network too much, but with cultivation, of course, that's what happens. And the big additional factor with no-till is the inputs and herbicides. And many farmers are interested to know how the herbicides affect their microbes. And I think that this is a pretty open question. I'll touch on that. But there are effects that are direct and indirect. Sometimes just getting rid of weeds has a big effect on microbes, which is nothing to do with the chemical. It's just to do with the change in the environment. Then fertiliser use. Fertilisers make plants grow more. It increases plant biomass. That affects the soil in massive ways with the root growth. And there are also implications for nitrogen cycling and loss of greenhouse gases. But before I get on to tillage, I see the soil as a seesaw. We put carbon in and it nicks off, it goes. And to change that is very difficult. Really, the only way that we can keep carbon in the soil is if we change the structure of the soil environment so that the microbes don't burn it off so fast. And I come from part of the world where some people say we don't have soil, we have sand. And a heavy clay is a very different situation to a sandy soil in southwestern Australia. And we live in this place where soil aggregation is such a different beast to that in a heavier soil. So keep in mind when I'm going through this, the difference between what you do when you disturb a sandy soil to what you do when you disturb a heavier soil. Now here's some work from North Carolina looking at measuring microbial biomass nitrogen and many other things measured in different tillage systems. So the first two on the left-hand side are organic systems, so the no-till on the left and then the organic till. And the three on the right-hand side, conventional no-till, conventional till and a control. So in this experiment, the no-till organic had higher microbial biomass. When you tilled that soil, the biomass was less. And what's nice about this study was that the measurements were taken over time, not just a one-off measurement, and there was an observation over a couple of years. But this is typical of the sort of studies that might be done to show how microbial biomass might change with a tillage practice. What happened? Oops. This is a slightly different version of an experiment looking at what happens with tillage. Now, just to explain, I'll see if I can get my... Okay. Here. So in this case, this is a study that was done in South Africa, and the idea here was to investigate erosion in relation to tillage. So the... So the plots were set up and the soil was collected as it eroded. And then that soil was taken back to the lab and it was checked for its capacity to respire. So that was done as a... really having trouble with this little thing.
There's a point.
Thanks. I don't know how to work this either. Oh, here we go. Yes, so sediments. So the eroded soil was collected and it was compared with the soil that was left back in the plots. And in this case, when the soil was tested for its capacity to respire, so the bugs in it breaking down the carbon, the soil that was washed off had a higher respiration rate than the soil that's left back. So clearly we don't want to be losing soil. We want to be keeping the soil with its carbon and its microbial activity back on the land. But here in this field, a lot of the carbon was being lost. A lot of the potential for the biology was lost. And just a quick reminder about what happens over time with infiltration. A common example of no-till is that with till compared to no-till, there's a change in infiltration. In this case, the top one is no-till, and the water has infiltrated much faster. So this is what we want. We want to be able to get moisture into the soil, and that will then affect microbial processes. Soil is a complicated place. This study has investigated a range of tillage practices with different rotations. They've also looked at different depths in the soil, and they've measured the effect of tillage on the aggregates in these different... This is not biology, this is just the structure of the soil. So looking across with depth and with these practices, there's not a lot of effect. The main effect is up here with the larger fractions of the soil where there's an effect of tillage. And there's a bigger effect when you've increased the organic matter that's gone in. So the cash crops that have been used here has built up more biomass, and you've had a bigger effect of that combination of tillage with the rotation you've used. So the aim is to build the soil with the no tillage. But in fact, a lot of the soil is not changing. Certainly at depth, there's not much happening. And it's this part, which is a coarse part of the fraction of the soil, where the biggest changes are probably happening to the microbial community. In the smaller fractions, there's less. There's a lot of nice studies now being done investigating the microbiology, the diversity of organisms across these different fractions. But commonly, the changes are happening here on the coarse fractions. And an example of a study where this time there's just three different tillage with and without till compared to grassland. And the bacterial community has been studied compared with the bulk soil. And again, they've looked at fractions. And I think it's important to think of the soil as these components and fractions, because the microbes that live in the different components of the soil are not all the same. So here, the dark line is the grassland, and obviously there's greater microbial content in that. And with tillage, you've decreased it. The effects are not the same in all the different fractions. There's very little happening in this fraction. There's a bigger effect, again, in that larger, the coarser fraction of the soil. But when you get down to the very fine fraction, you are getting an effect of tillage. Now, these are effects. We don't understand necessarily what is happening and why they're, or whether they're of significance. But I think that the new tools that people can investigate what's happening across the fractions is a big advance, and I think we'll learn a lot from that soon. Now, this is a study from Italy. This time, it's a study of the molecular structure of the communities within the soil. This is not the data for the molecular structure. This is the data for what the soil looks like. They've measured the porosity of the soil, measured the structure and the fractions of the soil and what the soil, what the home of the organisms is actually like. So they've divided the soil into classes according to their pore size. But in addition, they've measured the structure of the pores in the soil. So they had a porosity scale where they measured whether there were regular pores, irregular pores, or very elongated pores. So this is measuring in great detail the structure of the habitat of the microbes. And that's where they're doing their business, in the soil, in this environment. This study was of no-till and conventional, and it had with and without nitrogen, and very detailed in the way they've looked at the habitat. Then they've superimposed over that an investigation of the microbiology of the diversity, and I'm not presenting that data, but the interesting thing, just looking at the structure of the soil, is that the conventional tillage actually had a better structure than the no-till. In this study, there was a lot of compaction in the tillage in the no-till treatment. It's a heavy clay soil, and the effect was that the soil was better for the microbial diversity when it was tilled. So it comes back to this question of what's the soil like if you leave it untilled, there can be, for some soil types, greater compaction, and this will affect microbial activity. And the enormous detail that's gone into investigating the molecular community, the structure of the community within this environment of a detailed look at the soil habitat, I think is worth investigating. It's a good paper to go and have a look at. Now, herbicides, I'm not really going to speak much more than this slide about that, but herbicides is a complex factor. Now, just the complexity can be seen here. This is just a measure of diversity impact. Down here, these are treatments where herbicide was added before the plants were seeded. And up here are all the treatments that were in crop. So if you're going to work out what's the effect of a herbicide, everybody does it a different way, whatever chemical they're using or whatever practice they're using. So in order to investigate it, for us, microbiologists, it's very difficult. In this particular example, and this is from Canada, there are effects on the diversity of the community in some of the treatments here with 2,4-D as a pre-seed treatment, where you've had a double dose of glyphosate, there's an effect. But I don't think we can say generally there's an effect of a particular herbicide in a particular way. I think that needs to be studied locally. But overall, there can be effects, but I think the story on how they do affect is fairly complicated. Now, here's another complication. This time, the impact of fertilisers. Combining fertiliser with tillage, the tillage will affect the distribution of the fertiliser or not within the soil. So tillage can affect the structure, the bulk density, the aggregation of the soil. The residue will also have an impact on this. And that will then affect how nitrogen cycles through the system, whether or not there are emissions, and I just made this a hodgepodge, actually, because I think it's that complicated. But it needs to go back to whatever situation you're studying or the farmer's using, how fertiliser impacts within a tillage system. It's about root growth, it's about water, and I think this is a difficult thing to summarise, is to say tillage does this or tillage doesn't do something. It just probably depends. Now, just to go to Western Australia for a minute. This is Australia, if everybody recognises that. This is Western Australia here. And no-till was adopted very quickly over time, and we've got probably almost every farmer would have some sort of no-till. So the fact that this happened had a big impact on our environment. But still within our environment, we think no-till in our sandy soils is very important. It's not that straightforward. This is a study of Margaret Roper and others. And in this case, a blue dye was used to look at infiltration in the no-till compared to the tilled soil. So this is no-till, this is tilled. There was a good relationship between water repellents and carbon. The more carbon, the greater the water repellents in this soil. So having that organic matter on the soil interacted with the microbes and led to water repellents. However, when they investigated the actual infiltration into the soil at the start of the season, this is the conventional and this is the no-till, despite that there was higher water repellents because the organic matter had been retained, the water infiltrated the soil more quickly. And it's probably because in the no-till system there were preferred pathways and the structure was actually better than the conventional system. So as you went through the season later on, then water infiltrated okay. But there is a dilemma about the organic matter retention, the build-up of water, water repellents in these sandy soils. And it is a microbiological process, and you introduce no-till for a benefit, and then you get some other problems that come along the way. So these are part of what people are investigating. Another thing that happens in Western Australia is that the crops that are left, we don't have very high amounts of organic matter in a lot of our no-till, but if it's grazed, it does expose the soil. And this is about the water infiltration capacity of these soils in a whole lot of different treatments. And in some cases, when you graze, you get a better effect or a worse effect or no effect. So again, it's difficult to say. If you graze, no-till, you get rid of the organic matter to some extent, you'll get a certain effect. Local farmer knowledge in what happens on their soil, in their environment and their cropping system is central here. Another example of the sort of way you can look at effective tillage in our sandy soils using substrate response. In some cases, you've got a decrease in effective tillage, in another case, you've got an increase in tillage. So there are many ways you can look at effective tillage, but even when you get an effect, it's hard to say, well, this is what it means. So there's many ways to measure microbes and many ways that those measurements don't actually help us understand what's happening. Now, quickly, I'll just tell you about some work that's been done by Fran Hoyle and others in WA to work out whether we can build the capacity of carbon being held in the soil in our different soil types. So first, they measured the actual carbon in the soil, and then they modelled the expected or the attainable carbon using the Rothsee model. And in different soils, different soil types, they were able to measure the actual and then what that soil should potentially be able to hold. So how can we build that soil, and obviously with a no-till practice, how can we build it to have more carbon retained? Now, they then calculated for the different depths of the soil, with depth, what have we got? So they've actually shown that a lot of our surface soils are probably holding as much carbon, they're very sandy soils, they're probably holding close to their potential carbon. But as you go to a depth in soil, there's capacity to fill more with carbon. Now, in our environment, we want to use no-till, so how do you get carbon down into these spaces where there's capacity, but with a system, a farming system, where we don't really want to till and put carbon down there? So obviously there's room for it, but the practices are not going to really allow us to because of other soil and agronomic effects. Now, finally, should we disturb the no-till soils sometimes? So obviously no-till is pretty good, but should there be a time when we disturb it? Now, Michael Houston developed the dynamic equilibrium model some years ago, and I've reinvented it in around soil. It's not what he intended, but I've used this model to try and see how disturbance is related to the soil. So should some soils have more disturbance just to keep them going microbiologically more than others? So using his model of how do you maximise biological diversity, which is related in his model to a productivity factor and a disturbance factor, and I've translated productivity to soil from a sand to a clay, which is really a way of explaining capacity to produce. Now, if you have a sandy soil, you'll get maximum diversity by this theory, which is not tested, when you have less disturbance. In a heavier soil, you would get maximum diversity when there was some disturbance. So actually you need to stir it up a little bit if it's heavier. And that relates to that other study I talked about in Italy, where the compaction in the no-till situation was actually a problem in the heavier soils. Yep. So here, if you want to maintain diversity in a sandy soil, avoid disturbance, so no-till is good. But in a heavier soil, if you want to maintain diversity, I'm suggesting maybe you need to disturb it a little bit, and there's an ecological basis for that. So I'll just quickly mention one more thing. In Western Australia, Dan Murphy and others have set up a website which is called soilquality.org, which you might want to go and have a look at, where farmers can go and play and look at their local soil quality characteristics to get an idea of where they're sitting in relation to other farmers in the district. I'll stop there.